It's Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Before the break, we spoke with physicist David Latham about the ongoing search for exoplanets that could support life as we understand it. Meanwhile, a Milwaukee researcher is using a technology often linked to the way we see distant stars and planets and applying it to the way we see, period. Joe Carroll specializes in using what are known as adaptive optics to diagnose and potentially deal with eye disease. Carroll is the co-director of the Advanced Ocular Imaging Program at the Medical College of Wisconsin's Eye Institute. He gave a working definition of the technology to Lake Effect's Mitch Teich.
Adaptive optics is a technique that allows you to correct for imperfections when you're trying to image something. In the case of astronomy, when you're trying to image stars or planets or satellites, the imperfections come from the Earth's atmosphere. This technology was transferred to ophthalmology when you're trying to image the inside of the eye. Those imperfections come from the cornea and the lens, or the front part of the eye. And so adaptive optics can be used to correct for those imperfections as well.
And so is this extrapolating data or is this correcting the data? I mean, is this taking what we know about what's there and what we know about what's not visible and converting from one to the other, or is it literally a fix?
So it literally is a fix. If you think of customized LASIK surgery, which I'm sure you've heard of,
sure.
That's a form of adaptive optics, although it's a permanent fix. You measure exactly how the front part of the eye is distorting light, and you surgically correct for it. In the case of adaptive optics, we still measure how the front part of the eye is distorting light, but we do a temporary fix using a mirror that simply allows us to get a high-resolution picture at one moment in time, and it doesn't permanently change the person's vision in any way.
Well, and so what are the limitations in conventional imaging done with eyes that that adaptive optics seek to correct?
Our eyes are an imperfect device. As well as we think we see, the reality is our eyes are not very good optical devices. A famous scientist, Hermann von Helmholtz, once said if he had paid somebody to build this device, he would have promptly returned it and asked for his money back. And so adaptive optics is taking into account the fact that the cornea and the lens have imperfections in their structure. And so when light passes through these structures, rather than passing through in nice uniform waves, they get disrupted and distorted or bent in all sorts of different directions. And so by the time light arrives at the retina, that is the tissue inside of your eye that's responsible for seeing, by the time light gets there, it's distorted in such a way that makes the image anything but perfect. And adaptive optics seeks to bring back the perfection in the image that's arriving at the retina.
So are doctors missing things? Are they just not able to pinpoint things well enough? What's the impact of this been?
Well, absolutely. Both the doctors and the patients are missing things. By the time a patient notices, in many cases, that they have a problem with their vision, significant damage has already occurred to their retina. And in some cases, in some diseases, this may be as many as half of the cells in their retina are gone, and they're not coming back. So this really puts the physician at a disadvantage when treating those diseases, that by the time the patient shows up at their door and says, I can't see, they're already behind the eight ball. And so what this does is allows us to bring the detection phase of a disease to a much, much earlier portion of the disease, when maybe only a few cells have degenerated or died before the patient might even be aware of it. And that's really an exciting phase in ophthalmology, is to start treating diseases before the patient ever really realizes something's wrong.
Well, and so let me ask you maybe a dumb question. If the patient doesn't know anything is wrong, why is the patient going in and having his or her eyes checked out to begin with?
Well, a lot of people are going to be going in for annual eye exams or because there's a family history of an eye disease. Glaucoma is a great case where there's good, strong evidence that it's inherited. Age-related macular degeneration is another condition where if you have a grandparent or a great-grandparent with the condition, you yourself are at risk. And so you might consider getting an eye exam or advanced imaging on a more regular basis than, say, someone who has no family history or other risk factors for a condition.
So this technology, though, is at the verge of being able to be used by doctors on a more routine basis.
Well, on the verge is a relative depiction. We certainly hope so, and that's one of the missions of the Advanced Ocular Imaging Program, is to accelerate the translation of the imaging technology into more mainstream applications. Right now, there's fewer than about 24 of these devices in the world, and we've been really trying to pioneer dissemination of the technology to multiple centers around the world. to get more physicians on board to really help them see the power of adaptive optics imaging and what that can do for their understanding and their of different diseases and their management of their particular patient populations.
Would you anticipate this as a case of demand driving the supply? If more doctors and more patients demand that this technology be more commonly used, the supply and the availability of it will follow?
Absolutely. I think that's happened in the past couple of years. We've had a couple of companies that have built prototype devices on the heels of some really exciting advances that we've made and other groups have made in understanding about fundamental aspects of eye disease. And patients as well are getting more and more savvy in terms of availability of information on the internet. They can read about adaptive optics. They can see the images that we're up to. They can see what we've done, and they ask about it. And we're lucky at the Eye Institute, when they ask their physician about adaptive optics, our physicians can say, well, it's actually just right upstairs. So if you'd like to be imaged, we can certainly facilitate that.
What's making these advances possible today? Adaptive optics itself is not a brand new concept, but what has changed that is allowing you and the researchers who are driving this to make these advances?
Right. So adaptive optics itself was first proposed back in the 50s and actually wasn't implemented until the 60s and 70s by the Defense Department. And so it is an old technology. And what's really changed, I think, was a willingness or an acceptance by ophthalmologists to embrace new technology. And I think that was especially true here at the Medical College, where we've been lucky to have this interdisciplinary group of engineers and biologists who historically speak very different languages. But by putting them all in the same space, we've created an environment where people aren't afraid of the technology. And likewise, the engineers aren't fearful of the biology. And I think that's why we've sort of seen a growth in this development of the technology over the past few years, is other centers are now seeing the value of combining engineering with biology, you know, two unlikely bedfellows, if you will.
We hear a lot about the idea of the silo mentality, and this sounds like another example of that breaking down.
It's a perfect example. And, you know, Milwaukee's a great example of a place where we've combated that mentality of having these individual silos with places like Marquette, UWM, MSOE, and the Medical College. You have what appear to be silos, but actually very good collaboration we have a CTSI grant that allows the institutions to interact with each other on a very real basis, not just a sort of on paper type of a format.
You mentioned a couple of specific diseases and conditions. You mentioned glaucoma. You mentioned macular degeneration. Can you give us a sense for how the paradigm is likely to change with those conditions? I mean, walk us through how adaptive optics will change the game for people with those.
Sure. Well, maybe I'll introduce a different set of diseases, and that would be the hereditary retinal degenerations. And then maybe we can talk about glaucoma or AMD. In the case of hereditary retinal degenerations, for years the answer has been there's nothing we can do. Go seek low vision services. Prepare to lose your vision. And what's really where I think another factor that's prepared the community to accept an imaging technology like adaptive optics is there are now therapies for those conditions. The problem is knowing who to give which therapy to and how to assess whether the therapy is working. And that's where adaptive optics and similar imaging technologies will be really instrumental, is you have to know if you're going to, say, use a gene therapy for a particular condition, are there cells in the retina that are going to be there to receive the gene therapy that you're introducing, or have they died completely? And until now, we haven't had the technology to answer that question. Likewise, once you've injected a gene therapy into someone's eye, how do you assess whether it's working? Typical therapies would take 5 to 7 years to figure out, have you meaningfully changed their vision? Whereas with something like adaptive optics, we could image the patient immediately post-surgery, a week, month, 6 months, what have you, and assess how have we changed the structure that would then be predictive of a subsequent change in function. So that's really going to change the way we treat eye disease.
I was just going to interrupt. I imagine also being able to do this much earlier in the process is useful.
Absolutely. As with any disease, the earlier you intervene, the better the outcome is going to be. So then take a case like glaucoma, where glaucoma, it's estimated that by the time you notice a defect in your peripheral vision, that is your vision off to the side, the estimate is about half of your ganglion cells, that is the cells that transmit the electrical impulse to your brain, are gone. And so in glaucoma, really, the holy grail has been an early non-invasive biomarker for the disease. And we've relied on very subjective or indirect measurements that tell us maybe this eye is unhealthy, but we're not quite sure. So we're going to go ahead and give this person a bunch of eye drops. And of course, in glaucoma, once you start taking eye drops to manage your eye pressure, you're on them for life. And that's not really an effective strategy for treating disease. It manages the disease, but it doesn't truly treat the disease. So the more we can learn about, in this case, glaucoma on a cellular level, the better equipped we are to actually treat the disease, not simply – just not manage it.
So people are used to a certain set of machines when they go in for their typical eye exam. How different is the actual physical equipment that goes into adaptive optics versus what people are used to?
Well, it's quite different, and that's one of the things we had in mind when we built the Advanced Ocular Imaging Program was to create a space that didn't look as different as a regular ophthalmologist's office. So we took steps to make – we created a waiting room. We prettied up the instruments so it didn't look like a like the basement of an engineering lab, which is really what it was. We created an environment that looked more clinical because we knew we were going to be bringing through patients into this setting. But when you look at the device, it's covered in a box. You can't really see the inside. But when we take off the box, then you know it's different. It's basically a microscope with its insides all spread out on a table. And when patients come through for imaging, some of them want to learn about the device. And it's actually a great opportunity to educate patients about the technology that they're being imaged with. Whereas when they're in a regular clinic, they don't have that opportunity to learn what's being done to them down to the very specific detail.
I imagine there is a certain significant learning curve for people in the ophthalmology field to be able to interpret the results of this kind of equipment.
There is, and that's – you know, the picture is the first half of the story. Once you've got an image of someone's retina, the challenge really is how do we interpret this? And in many cases, what's been difficult is we're seeing things that no one has ever seen before. We're redefining eye disease and what we thought we knew about a particular condition and how it evolves and how it starts. In some cases, it turns out to be completely wrong. In other cases, it turns out to be completely confusing. And so this is where we need the third arm. We have the engineers, the biologists, but then we need the doctors, the MDs, the ones that have the historical clinical experience, the pathology experience that can help us interpret the images. And so it's that trifecta that we have within our imaging program that helps us interpret the images quite readily.
Fascinating stuff. Joe Carroll, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Joe Carroll is co-director of the Advanced Ocular Imaging Program at the Medical College of Wisconsin's Eye Institute. He spoke with Mitch Teich. There's a link to more about adaptive optics at wuwm.com/lake effect. We'll take one last break, and then an essayist has some thoughts on the double-edged sword that is technology. Lake Effect returns with that in just a moment on WUWM.